One, hold the paper up. One, two, three.
You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, November 24th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York... Wait, what am I talking about? We are broadcasting live from the heartland, downtown Brooklyn. On the program today, Heather Hurlburt on the news that Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel will be stepping down. Also on the program today, Israel, a powder keg. Benghazi, a nothing keg. Yes. The House Intelligence Committee has basically debunked their own theories about Benghazi. Watching Michael try and work the thing. It's Matt's microphone you're using. So put up Matt. Now talk into it. I don't know what happened. It was working before.
I don't know. No,
oh, that's why.
Oh, he has the button on it. Keg is tap, bro.
Yeah. And, yeah. Also on the program, Walmart workers planning Black Friday strikes. And in Afghanistan, we will start our... No, they're not night raids. They're night visits now. And we're going to be doing them well into 2015. And Rudy Giuliani decrying black-on-black crime. That's the reason why we got to send in our white cops. Because you guys can't stop killing each other. And speaking of bra, Scott Brown... Going back to Fox News, dude. Why wouldn't I? Honestly.
Outnumbered.
You got to put up the...
Yeah.
Right. Michael does not know how to work the board. Well, it's only been 2 years. Also, on the program today, of course, your phone calls. Will you turn the music down? Now, I was getting reports that the music's really loud. So you see those two green bars? Those lights lighting up in yellow. Well, don't look like, how could I tell you that? You can't work the other stuff. So I'm just telling you, you'll notice occasionally I'm going into the red almost. When the music is going on, you got to make sure that the music is hitting the same levels, those yellow levels, as I am, unless you want to bring it under. So it was a little bit soft. So when we play this interview, you got to make sure that it's hitting that level too, right? Okay, you're clear. You can't answer me because you don't know how to work your microphone. But aside from that, folks, just a brief reminder. This program is, and I think it's quite obvious, funded exclusively by its members. And so we don't have big production budgets. We don't have, what do you call it, redundancy in terms of our operations. I go in when I go into MSNBC. Oh, Stephen is off work today, so Mary's covering. Oh, really? That's awesome. How does that work? You don't have to shut the show down. So, folks, your support will keep the show alive and give us the redundancy that we need. Also, so you can just head over to jointhemajorityreport.com to become a member today. And also, if you're one of those people who really, for whatever reason, has said, if I can get this for free, if I can... If I can get this for free, why would I ever pay for it? But there's other things I will do to help out the show. Well, this is one of those things. We're doing a survey so that we can get maybe some advertisers on board with the program. We have the numbers, but frankly, advertisers are a little bit nervous about political shows, both on radio and on podcasts. So you can help us get over the hump. It will take you less than 5 minutes. It is completely anonymous to the extent that anything is anonymous these days. You'll just come up as a blip on some NSA computer. Go to podsurvey, as in P-O-D, the word survey, .com/majority. We have a link on the front page of the site. We're going to put it in every post. podsurvey.com/majority. I'll say it one more time because a lot of people listen on their iPhones. They got to write it down, but it's spelled. You can just, this is the way you remember something like this. You right now, you go to your memo thing and just talk it in there. Podsurvey, podsurvey.com/majority. And it'll take you 4 minutes to fill out the survey. It will be a big help to us. And if you want to give them your email, and they claim they will not use it at all, and I have no reason to disbelieve them, you can put your email address in for a $100 Amazon gift card. That's not necessary, though. So go over there, check it out. And also, of course, at majorityreportkickback.com is our Amazon link. If you buy crap from Amazon, click on that link, bookmark it. Always buy your Amazon crap from there. We get a little bit of a... of a kickback. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Heather Hurlburt. We got a quick interview with her about Chuck Hagel's announcement that he is resigning. Wait, no. Do you have my – the computer is going to come up here. So here we go. The computer's up. All right. Here we go. Oh, here we go. Sorry. Not the way we usually do that. Play song. We are back on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program Heather Hurlburt, the Director of New Models of Policy Change at the New America Foundation. Heather, thanks for joining us.
Sam, I'm still waiting for you to have me back when something good happens, but it's good to be here anyway.
Well, all right. So I guess you've just you've tipped your hand here. Chuck Hagel announces his resignation. It seems like it was one of those special Washington resignations. Give me your sense of, is this, I mean, what has brought us to this point?
So apparently the White House has wanted him out for a while. Apparently they've been talking to him about it for over a month. There's been complaints around town for quite a while that morale was low at the Pentagon, that as has happened before, it turns out that what makes you a good senator does not necessarily make you a good manager. And the feeling was there was a lot of discontent in the building and just mounting levels of hostility between Hagel and the White House over how things were getting done, how fast things were getting done. The Times had a story a while back about Hagel slow-walking the release of some former – the transfer of some Guantanamo detainees, of an exchange of letters. I mean, it's kind of unusual that your national security advisor has to send a letter to the Secretary of Defense. And the piece that was added to the puzzle today – was this concern that Hagel, as one of his defenders said, Hagel went to the Pentagon to end a war. He didn't go to the Pentagon to start a war, that maybe his set of strengths and weaknesses were not what was needed to take on ISIS.
Okay, so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. So we get a sense of where he stood on Guantanamo. Everything else, like, what is it that the White House wanted him to do that he wasn't doing fast enough? I mean, but the broader story that is sort of very general, and, you know, for someone who's not an expert at this as opposed to yourself, it appears that, you know, Hagel was brought in to sort of wind things down and maybe sell that to the Pentagon, I guess. And then things have changed because of ISIS or because we're staying in Afghanistan, as announced Friday, I think, night, sometime, you know, after dinner. So give us a sense of where was this rift? And along with that, the Pentagon's complaining, but they're also dealing with budget cuts. So was he the sort of the scapegoat? Give us where everybody was, not just, you know, the dynamic.
Yeah. So Pentagon... You know, the big thing that's happened on the budget front is that Congress can't agree on repealing or changing sequestration, which is imposing automatic cuts on the Pentagon that are being implemented in a way that's outside the Secretary of Defense's control. But, you know, when you cut your family budget, you know, maybe you cut your Starbucks budget more and your budget for heating oil less, and Hagel didn't have the discretion to do that. So, you know, in that sense, in terms of trying to do the things Obama sent him there to do, events were totally beyond his control. You did, from a dynamics point of view, hear a lot of talk around town that he just wasn't a very good manager, that, as you said, he wasn't doing an especially good job either of selling to the Hill or of selling to his own workforce. And from some of the there's just been a river of nasty anonymous commentary about him this morning, which, you know, I don't want to say it's unprecedented, but it's surprising that your Secretary of Defense, who you're going to keep in office until you appoint a successor, you've had all these White House officials out there on background saying, oh, he never talked in cabinet meetings. Oh, we were all unimpressed with him, which, again, is odd. So, you know, honestly, it does appear to me that there were substantive issues, and ultimately there was a huge stylistic gulf between Hagel and the team at the White House.
And, I mean, you know, I have to say that in that regard, I mean, obviously I have no way of measuring the guy short of his time in the Senate and his confirmation hearings, but he did a very poor job at his confirmation hearings, it seems to me. I don't know what accounted for that, but give me your sense. I mean, is he that not well spoken?
I have seen both extremes. I have seen him be very well spoken and funny and personable, and I've also seen the kind of stumbling, halting, not much to say performance that you describe, and that for folks who had better things to do than to watch the confirmation hearings, he really seemed not to know what he was talking about, which certainly wasn't the case, because the guy is smart, whatever else you think of him. So, you know, he is, for better or worse, he is quite the iconoclast. And I think in some ways exactly the qualities that drew President Obama to him and made them like each other personally, you know, sort of an unwillingness to say things that just because you were supposed to say them, an unwillingness to sort of show up and act in the way that you were supposed to act. an unwillingness to engage, that, you know, the, and a, maybe a disdain for sort of the nuts and bolts of how the day, how you have to get through the day, you know, ultimately made him not able to save himself. That, you know, just, but I want to stress, it's some of those same qualities that I do think made him attractive, you know, to Obama and to lots of other people who, remember, saw him as this kind of fabulous post-ideological, straight-talking, tell-it-like-it-is figure. Well, if it turns out, if he doesn't have anything nice to say, he just doesn't say anything. You know, that, when you lead a large organization, that doesn't work.
Right. And so, what, so to the extent that this was about substance and not, I guess, sort of process and, you know, sort of, I guess, White House intrigue. My understanding is that there was also sort of some type of, the Pentagon was slightly at war with Susan Rice, and maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration. Where, what does this say about where we're going in terms of foreign policy, and then use that as, I guess, a springboard to tell us who may replace Hagel? It is very weird that the guy has to sit around and wait for his replacement. Particularly, my understanding is he had just canceled a couple of trips, right? I mean, so he seems to have already half checked out at this point.
Yeah, I and particularly, as I say, after the avalanche of anonymous sniping that was unleashed this morning, it's very classy of him to agree to stay around. And you have to wonder, you have to wonder how long it's going to take Congress to approve a successor. But I think, you know, sort of the factor that answers both your questions is there is now the perception that we're back in a more wartime mode with the fight against ISIS. And I guess you could say in wartime, what you're going to want is a Secretary of Defense that can sell to the public and to allies. And to the Pentagon. So my guess there is that means the three criteria the White House are going to be looking is going to be looking for is, number one, do you get along with the inner circle? Number two, are you a charismatic figure? And number three, can you actually run the world's largest bureaucracy? And, you know, the challenging thing about that, by the way, is that some of the candidates whose names you're hearing most loudly don't necessarily score on all three points. So I would not be surprised if they name, say, an outgoing senator on the grounds that that person could get confirmed easily and then sort of be in place to lead. Because the other thing is, this is a little bit of a lame duck job. You know, 2 years is a very short time in the life of an administration. So there may be people who actually don't want the job right now.
All right. So wait a second. So tell us, who are those names that we hear floated?
The two names you've heard all over this morning are Michelle Flournoy, mm-hmm. who was the number three civilian in the Pentagon in the first Obama term, has a long history as a defense wonk, is a very, very credible and serious person, well-liked across the aisle. Other choices, Ash Carter, Harvard academic, who was the number two in the Defense Department, which is more of an administrative job, again, in the first term, similarly very well-liked, although maybe a bit more controversial in some quarters. Frankly, there's two reasons to pick Michelle. One is that she's fantastically smart, and the other reason is that she'd be the first woman in the job, and it would be an achievement. Now, she's not an Obama insider. She's much more associated with the sort of Clinton wing of the party, and I don't know to what extent that will weigh on the White House. Carter. Again,
and she's also relatively more hawkish, too, isn't she? I mean, I guess in terms of, like, relative to Hagel.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a downside. Record. My guess would be that's not a downside for the administration, but I'm thinking, you know, sort of from other perspective.
Yeah, on both Iraq and Afghanistan, she was definitely more hawkish than Hagel. Some of the bizarre thing about this, frankly, is that Hagel, who had the reputation for, you know, ending wars, not starting them, Hagel was out there saying some very, very extreme things about how great the threat from ISIS was. That was actually somewhat frustrating to people inside the administration who felt he had sort of gone too far in the other direction and was hyping threat of ISIS beyond what it actually is. So it gets harder and harder, frankly, to put people on a coherent hawk, non-hawk scale. But
what accounted for that? I mean, it seems like way off the reservation. It also seems like not just out of line with what the White House wanted to message, but it also seems a little bit crazy to me. I mean, this guy made ISIS out to be, you know, the sort of the next, I don't know, Nazi Germany.
There's definitely it's not just Hegel. You can hear a whole strand of American security thinkers who talk in those terms. And in my view, they're apocalyptic and wrong. And just because someone says, I'll see you in New York, does not mean that they have any actual capability or planning to do it. So it's not, unfortunately, just Hegel who's been indulging in this kind of threat inflation. And I think there's something about the graphicness of how ISIS operates combined with the slickness of their propaganda that has unnerved a big chunk of our security community. And I want to say they are a serious security concern, and I don't want to be misinterpreted as saying that they're not a security concern, but going from they're a security concern to they're the next Nazi Germany, as you say, Hegel had some company in that, but I do think, and again, as we were saying earlier, he's just a guy who opens his mouth and what he thinks comes out.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just wonder, how that one makes that assessment. There is a huge difference between a security concern and an existential threat to the entire world.
Well, frankly, one of the hardest things about being a security professional in this country is that to a certain extent, your job is to look at the worst case scenarios, right? So there are people at the working level whose job is to spend all day, every day assessing, is it possible that ISIS does actually have a master plan that includes conquering the United States? You know, and if you spend hours and hours a day immersed in that stuff, it does change your thinking. So one of the things I wonder about somebody like Hegel is, you know, was he both spending a lot of time with the people whose job it is to think the worst case scenarios, and, you know, having that level of responsibility changes people, and to what extent did ISIS reflect, you know, because it's a challenge that came along on his watch, that his normal skepticism sort of no longer applied in his own mind.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Fair enough. So we have these two potential replacements from the Defense Department that you think may not end up getting the job. What about a guy like I've heard Senator Jack Reed proposed? What about Jim Webb, that would be fairly controversial, wouldn't it, that type of pick?
Now, that would be sort of a fascinating stroke, because Jim Webb has, as you surely know, has been out there talking a good game about running for president.
Indeed.
So that would change the landscape in very interesting ways. You know, in some ways, Webb is cut from the same ideological mold as Hegel. And I also, frankly, I see Webb as similarly, you know, a very smart man, an intellectual, a provocateur. I'm not sure how I feel about him running a big organization, but I do.
Right,
think
and from the administration
right
perspective, he's probably the last type of guy you want in that position. Someone who is going to just freelance for 2 years.
Yep, but I do think you're right to be looking in the former senator, former member of Congress department. So. And my understanding is that Jack Reed has told the White House in the past he's not interested. But so for listeners who don't know, Jack Reed, senator from Rhode Island, West Point graduate, paratrooper, and who has a pretty skeptical set of attitudes, very much in line with Obama's, I think, about the use of force. A couple of other names I would throw out. So Carl Levin, who's just stepping down, you know, from years of chairing Senate Armed Services. Jane Harman, who is sitting at the Woodrow Wilson Center, is well-respected on both sides of the aisle. Help me out here. Who?
Well, Jane Harmon. There's a lot of national security issues. I just remember her from her time on in dealing with those type of issues. But all right, fair enough. Who else?
She would drive the left crazy. But yes. If your first concern is to get a secretary confirmed.
Right.
She also, by the way, is someone who speaks her mind, and so actually she might be disqualified under the Webb proviso. Levin's, if you wanted to make a bipartisan pick, who's stepping down as chairman of House Armed Services, Buck McKeon, although I can't know. Never mind. I can't even imagine that.
I mean, how much is it, it seems to me that this is one of those situations where either the Republicans are going to confirm somebody or they're not. I mean, short of, Bill Ayers being appointed here, it seems to me that there's a decent amount of leverage, and this is one of those ones where the Republicans – we'll get someone in there. It will necessarily, more often than not, I think the idea is that the White House is not going to be too far afield from where the Republicans are on this. And this is their opportunity to say, yeah, look, we confirmed some of the president's nominees. And there seems to me to be a lot of leverage on the White House side if they don't confirm someone quickly.
No, I think you're totally right that actually you could sort of treat this just the opposite and say, we're at war with ISIS. You're not going to confirm my pick for Secretary of Defense and put forward a Flournoy or, another interesting possibility would be Adam Smith, ranking Democrat on House Armed Services, who's been close to Obama, was a big Obama booster in 2012, did a lot of national security surrogacy work and definitely positioning himself in that way. You know who I'd love to see that I'm going to start my little mini boom is Tim Kaine.
Tim Kaine. And why Tim Kaine?
Tim Kaine from Virginia was a governor intimately acquainted with both the realities of running organizations and the realities of what military life, military installations are like because of the huge amount of presence he had to deal with in Virginia as governor, serves on both Senate Armed Services and Senate Foreign Relations, and has really been a leader in carving out a sort of non-interventionist but pro-engagement with the world, if you will, national security policy. I just heard him speak this past weekend, by the way. I've got him on the brain. But talking about, he's one of the leaders in insisting that the administration come to Congress and get authorization for the war in Iraq and Syria. On the other hand, saying, yes, I want to see Assad tried for war crimes, but I don't want to see regime change be part of U.S. government policy. He's been a very thoughtful guy about how do you set out a serious progressive national security policy, he's a good team player. So I'd like to start a little Tim Kaine boomlet.
Well,
can lose him in the Senate. I don't know that Virginia can to lose him in the Senate though. But there, okay, Tim Kaine boomlet. You heard it here first.
All right. Well, Heather Hurlburt, director, New Models of Policy Change at the New America Foundation. Thanks so much for your time today. Genuinely appreciate the boomlet has been unleashed, and we'll see what happens.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Heather.
We are back on the Majority Report on the phone.
Turn that down. All right. All right, folks, that was Heather Hurlburt, and from earlier today. Just saw a piece that Ash Carter had argued at his time, at the Defense Department for bombing North Korea. I don't know if that's the case. I just saw that headline briefly. So that just gives you a sense of who we may or may not be looking at. And weird for Hagel to hang around under these circumstances, but that's the situation. Meanwhile, on Friday, on one of those one cheek sneaks as Janine would call them, the Friday news dump. For news that you want to hear, actually, there was two big things. There was this, I don't even know if I would call it an announcement. It was a report in the New York Times about the administration and Afghanistan. And then, of course, there was the House Intelligence Committee report on Benghazi, which, spoiler alert, there was nothing scandalous about it except for the fact that, as happens in the Foreign Service, people died and were killed. But we will get to that later. And I should remind you that tomorrow on the program, Janine Garofalo will be here answering your phone calls, your IMs, and your emails if you've sent them or send them to us in the next 24 hours, less, with the subject heading Thanksgiving. If you need advice on dealing with your conservative in-laws, parents, cousins, friends at Thanksgiving, Janine will be here to do that, our annual pre-Thanksgiving show. So, and for members, we may have some content for the freebies on Wednesday and Friday. Probably not. For members, we'll have at least a Wednesday show and probably a Friday show, something from the deep archive. And so if you have something that you're interested in from the deep archive of this program, back in the Air America days, send us an email about that, but do it quick. All right, so on Friday, I should say, yeah, on Friday, the New York Times reported, and on Saturday, a White House official responded to the story that President Obama had issued a secret order continuing combat operations in 2015 after their planned end on December 31st. More has come out on that. The government of the new Afghani president, Ashraf Ghani, apparently has quietly lifted the ban on night raids by special forces troops that his predecessor, Karzai, had imposed. The Afghan National Army Special Forces units are planning to resume the raids in 2015, and in some cases, the raids will include members of American Special Ops units in an advisory role. They'll do ride-alongs. I wonder if they'll be armed. My guess is yes. This news comes after the published accounts of this order by President Obama to allow the American military to continue some limited combat operations in 2015. This is my favorite part of this piece. That they're no longer going to call them night raids because they developed a bad name in country because it led to so many civilian deaths. The American military has renamed them night operations. There you go, folks. That's all it takes. We're no longer doing night raids.
We just got some night moves.
And remember, these American forces will just be advisors, as in, I advise you to kick the door in and have everyone flat on their stomachs. In fact, I would imagine the advisors come in and advise those civilians.
They can cut out the middleman.
That's right.
On the advice.
So there's going to be more raids on in Afghanistan. It's going to go into 2015 at least. According to the unnamed White House official, the American mission in 2015 would be primarily training, advising, and assisting the Afghan National Security Forces. As part of this mission, primarily, In other words, at least 51% of what they do will be training. As part of this mission, the United States may provide combat enabler support to Afghan special forces in limited circumstances to prevent detrimental strategic effects to these Afghan security forces. Combat enabler is military jargon for functions like air support, transportation, intelligence gathering, and communications. And probably also combat. Nasrullah Zarzai, Mr. Ghani's spokesman, said that the American and NATO missions in 2015 would be governed by the security agreements that the Afghan government has signed with the U.S. and with NATO. And then deep, at the end of this piece, Haj Abdullah Jan, a local Shura leader in the Maiwan district of Kandahar province, "I'm not in favor of night raids because we've experienced such huge losses from them during those past years." So at least we heard both sides. And there you have it. I imagine that will be one of the projects of the next defense secretary. Someone just IM'd me. I'll read this IM. Why not? Who was it? Oh, I don't know where that has come up. But I think it was something to the effect of, yes, we've got some special ops guys. Would you rather there be divisions of military personnel? And I suppose there's an argument. Then try and sell that to the American public. I don't know. That's my feeling on that. Meanwhile, in Israel, since we are hanging around that part of the world, it really does feel like there is, and I just saw a report, and I haven't dug too much into it, calling East Jerusalem as a powder keg. Israeli police have set up new checkpoints outside of Arab neighborhoods. Soldiers on Thursday morning went into refugee camps in East Jerusalem. This is all in the wake of an attack on some Jews in Jerusalem. Knife-wielding, hatchet-wielding attack. Three of them, I think, are American citizens. Praying on the Mount. Is that it, essentially, at the wall? Somewhere in that area. Meanwhile, the Israeli cabinet has approved a bill. Now, I'm not 100% sure how their system works. It's not. This is not a done deal. But bills come out of the cabinet and then make their way to the parliament, or the Knesset, as they call it. And it gets a vote there. So this is not a done deal. But the Israeli cabinet has approved a bill declaring Israel a Jewish state. A controversial move seen as intensifying discrimination against Arabs residing in occupied territories. Ministers voted 14-6 in favor of the bill, which is threatening the unity of the governing coalition. Of those 20 ministers, they represent multiple parties who bring votes to maintain the power of the coalition. Following the approval in the cabinet, it will head to the parliament. Addressing his cabinet, Benjamin Netanyahu said, "Israel is the Jewish national state for the Jewish people with equal rights for all citizens." But the reason why this bill is so divisive is because it necessarily means that the notion of Israel being a Jewish state will be enshrined in its legal system and opens the door to people who do not self-identify themselves as Jews to become second-class citizens. Arguably the case with some Arab Israelis, but becomes far more definitive, obviously. Netanyahu said the proposed bill would complement the policy, this is wonderful, of demolishing the family homes of those involved in attacks on Israelis, which his government adopted in annexed East Arab Jerusalem this month. So, I mean, just imagine how it would work in this country. Your son or daughter becomes a serial murderer, or your son or daughter becomes a terrorist. Your house gets demolished. And then I guess once you've introduced that concept, right, your kid steals something, maybe, I don't know, what happens? You come and pay a fine. And we're not talking about minors here, right? We're talking about people over the age of 21. Netanyahu said, it cannot be that those who attack Israeli citizens and call for the elimination of the state of Israel will enjoy rights such as national insurance and their family members as well who support them. Unbelievable. Not unbelievable. Totally believable. And sad. Meanwhile, despite the fact that the Israeli government is claiming that Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority president, as bearing a primary responsibility for the outbreak of terrorist acts in Jerusalem, senior defense officials and basically their spy agencies say, no, Abbas is not functioning that way. He's the best way to keep a lid on it. I don't understand what the... We don't need to go into it.
Abbas is literally a security subcontractor for Israel in the West Bank.
Right.
That is his actual function. And if there's anybody in that process who still has any remote commitment to two states and all of the 1990s stuff, it's him.
Right.
To blame him is like...
It's basically a signal of the Netanyahu government. I mean, both they're anticipating elections, but I think also there's a lot of sort of setting up here. Like, we can actually do this. We can do a one-state situation where we subjugate a huge portion of the people that we control. Don't want to say are our citizens. They don't really live here. They're just vacationing forever.
Right, right.
All right, we're going to take a break. The number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. If you want to be a part of the program, you can IM me at Majority FM. In the funner half of the program, we're going to do the Benghazi boogaloo. The House Intelligence Committee has come out and said that... The House Intelligence Committee has come out and said that there's really nothing to Benghazi. Now, folks, I would love to hear you weigh in on this Benghazi thing, and you can call me at 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. But before you weigh in on Benghazi-ness, on the Benghazi-tude, or the idea that Lindsey Graham thinks that this is just a sham, first, help the Majority Report. I have told you many times the difficulty of a political podcast in getting advertisers. Show them you're not scary people. I don't know. Or pretend that you're not scary people. Head over to podsurvey.com/majority. That's podsurvey, as in podcast. But it's not podcast survey. It's pod, P-O-D, survey.com, then that's /majority. Fill out this survey. It is so easy. People are saying that I'm underselling it or overselling it. I'm not sure exactly what's accurate by saying it takes 5 minutes. It takes like 3 minutes. When you take this survey, which is completely anonymous, we will then take the results of that survey, show it to the people who get us advertising. They will say, oh my gosh, look at this. You people are DIYers, or you share, oh my God, is there any podcast out there that is not put out by a university that has a higher percentage of graduate degrees or whatever it is? So go to podsurvey.com/majority. It will take you just a moment. It'll be a big help to us. Much appreciated. All right, we're going to head into the funner half. 646-257-3920 is the number. The IM, Majority FM. You can IM us via the app at majorityapp.com. Reminder, Janine Garofalo in studio for the entire program tomorrow. Answering your questions, how do you deal with your conservative family members at Thanksgiving? We'll be right back after this.